Robert Bival with us. We're going live to Europe in a moment with him. Incredible work that he has been doing, the Giza excavations. He's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Robert Bival, of course, author, lecturer, ancient Egyptian researcher, best known for his Orion correlation theory, and what a classic it was with the Orion mystery. Since then, of course, he's written a number of books, and he continues to spend most of his time and engineering career working and living in the Middle East and Africa as a construction engineer, and of course, looking at the Giza pyramids. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Robert. How are you? Way out. You're in Spain now, right? Aren't you?
Yes. Hi, George. How are you?
Good to have you with us. What are you doing in Spain? What's going on there?
I live here, George.
You do? Okay.
Let me give you the setting, though, so people can realize where I am. It's about 10 past 9 a.m. in southern Spain. I live on the coast of Andalusia, and it's sunny and warm.
For December, it shouldn't be that warm.
Well, we're in the most southern spot of Europe, so yeah. I mean, there are actually people on the beach this morning. So
that's amazing. That's exciting. Well, what's new on your visits and travels to Egypt, and you're looking at the Giza pyramids?
Well, Egypt is going through a rather bad patch at the moment.
It sure is.
The last time I was there was in September, and frankly, it was fine. I mean, I took a group of about 15 people with me, and we traveled unhindered all over Egypt. Speaking of the Giza Necropolis, it was amazing. I mean, on the one hand, yes, it's very sad because tourism is at its lowest ever. I've never seen it so low.
Oh, of course, yeah.
The sites were virtually empty. And but you know, for people visiting at this time, it was great. And we've had a visit inside the Great Pyramid, which I have to admit we've never had before. I mean, there was literally no one there except my group, and they were absolutely thrilled. I mean, we went inside the Great Pyramid, just the 15 of us. We were allowed to sit in the King's Chamber and spend some time there. So. It's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, Egypt is suffering economic recessions because of this, but for the tourists, it's paradise.
I hear Zahi Hawass may still be in hot water out there. Can you give us an update?
Yes. Well, I have to, you know, in the update, sadly, and I'll get to Zahi Hawass in a minute, is that since September, things have changed for the worse, I have to say. We were all extremely surprised, and I'm sure you've heard about this, George, of the acquittal of the ex-president Mubarak and his gang. This came as a shock to most Egyptians, and unfortunately, it set a very worrying trend. People are worried that the old regime is coming back. There's been protests again in the streets. You may or may not have heard, but several embassies have closed their doors this last week. So things are not going in the right direction. But it's a very confusing time, really, because they've had 3 years of unsettlement since the revolution, and it's not clear how they want to stabilize the country, and some decisions are upsetting people, this one in particular. As for Zahi, well, you know, George, I've been battling Zahi for the last 25 years.
Yeah, you have. There's no doubt about that.
He's, I don't know where he is right now, probably in his home. There's been quite a commotion in the last year, which dragged me into another big confrontation with him. As you know, he has been my nemesis, or vice versa, since the early 90s. He took particular offense and a very strong critical position when I published my first book. And since then, we've we've had a kind of rivalry that that ended up in the media and all sorts of nasty things going on. But something rather odd happened last year. Can I? You'll have to interrupt me, by the way. If
No. I'm fascinated by this. Go ahead.
Well, something rather odd dragged me into a real frontal confrontation with Zahi, starting last year in December. Unknown to I think the whole world except those who were involved, a group of Germans, three Germans to be precise, entered with a private visit permit the Great Pyramid last year in April. Now, I need to explain something because a lot of people have been confused about how you enter this pyramid privately.
Right. And was Zahi out of power by that time?
Yes, Zahi was. Zahi has been out of the Ministry of Antiquities since
a couple of years
July
at least.
2011.
Okay.
But let me give you the gist of all this. To enter the Great Pyramid in normal condition, for the last 25 years it's been the same, people buy a ticket to enter the Giza Necropolis, the area, and then you have to buy another ticket to have a visit inside the Great Pyramid. This is a public visit, and this is done on a daily basis. However, as amazing as it may sound, you can actually rent the pyramid for 2 hours, either before opening hours or after closing hours. And it has been very, very strange that you can do this. You know, people, groups, it's done through a tour operator. So if, for example, you want to visit the pyramid with a group of friends, you ask a tour operator in Egypt to get you a private visit permit. He applies to the Ministry of Antiquities, and they issue this permit. Now, let me give you the ins and outs of this permit.
Sure.
It's a simple paper that is on the letterhead of the tour operator. He doesn't even have to mention your names. He just says, for example, six Americans or six Germans or three Dutch or whatever, and it's typed asking for the hours, usually in the morning, from 4 to 6 or 6 to 8 before opening hours, and the paper is circulated in the Ministry of Antiquities, and various people sort of scribble on it, saying okay,
yeah,
and
they sign off on it, sure,
and that's the permit. Now, the cost of this permit is 5,000 Egyptian pounds, which is very roughly these days about $800. It serves, you can get it for one person, or you can get it for up to 25 people. It's the same cost.
Same cost, okay.
So you can imagine that if you have a group of about 20 people, it's the price of a meal. You know, and I find it extraordinary that you can rent the pyramid like an hotel room. I mean, there are hotel rooms which are more expensive than this these days.
That's weird. And how long can they stay in there? A couple hours?
The permit is for 2 hours.
2 hours. Okay.
So having said this, I've been an advocate for many, many years that, well, first, I don't see why it should be done because it doesn't really raise that much money for the Ministry of Antiquities. I mean, the Ministry of Tourism makes much, much more revenue than this. The other thing is that the security is very slack. They don't even have the names of the people on the permits. So, you know, sooner or later, there was bound to be some people with wrong intentions.
That's right.
To mess around in there.
Yeah.
You know, and the supervision is, to say the least, extremely slack. What happens is you go with the permit, with your tour operator. You're met at the foot of the pyramid by inspectors that are assigned to supervise your visit. One or two security police, depending on the number of people. Now, well, you know, I hate to say this, but these security guards are extremely badly trained. The inspectors, well, they want to please. Now, strictly speaking, you can't enter this pyramid with any equipment whatsoever. You cannot take cameras. You cannot take filming equipment.
So somebody couldn't smuggle in, let's say, an assault rifle, right?
Well, in those days, well, let me tell you what has been smuggled in, if you like.
All right.
I mean, I know this because I've been involved with the Gizeh Necropolis for years, but some people have been in there with professional cameras, for example. They've done documentaries. Now, let me explain the interior of the pyramid for your listeners, because I'm sure many of them have not been there.
Right.
The Great Pyramid has three major chambers. One chamber known as the subterranean chamber, which is under the pyramid, usually closed for normal visitors. Then within the pyramid itself, there is the Queen's Chamber. Now, in order to access these upper chambers, you have to go up an ascending corridor. It's a very low corridor. You have to crouch, climbing for about 300 feet. And you reach what is known as the Grand Gallery. It's a sort of huge, very high tunnel of about 40 meters. You've been in there, by the way, George, haven't you?
No, I've never been there. Never been there.
You're kidding me.
I want to go. You know, my dad was born, my father was born in Cairo.
I know. We've had many chats about
Many chats about that. And I'd love to do my broadcast from out there one day. But
well, let me fix it up for you then.
You're the man. Okay.
No, I'm serious.
I've done a broadcast
from inside the Great Pyramid once with the BBC. So,
right.
Yeah, it can be done. Okay, anyway, to carry on, you reach this Grand Gallery after climbing the very narrow ascending corridor. It's the first amazing impression you get, because it looks like a cathedral within the pyramid. It's very impressive. And it's about 50 meters long. You ascend this. It's on a slope. So you climb this grand gallery, and you reach the entrance. You reach the entrance of the King's Chamber. Now, the King's Chamber is open for normal visits and for these private visits. There is a chamber under lower down, which is known as the Queen's Chamber, which is normally closed but sometimes open. And that's it. That's what you're allowed to do on a private visit or normal visit.
That's it. Okay.
And it's very impressive.
And then you look around on the outside. You can walk around it, I assume?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
But let me tell you what is not allowed normally.
Normally.
You are not allowed to go in what is known as the relief chambers. And again, for the benefit of your listeners, there are five extra chambers on top of the King's Chamber. These were not known to exist until 1837. And the reason is that they were totally sealed. No one knew that there were chambers up there. It is only in 1837 that a British explorer, the famous Colonel Howard Vyse, who was allowed to literally blast his way in the pyramids with gunpowder, went above the King's Chamber. Now, in order to get there, and this is very important for everybody to understand, you're at the top of the Grand Gallery, at the entrance of the King's Chamber.
Okay.
In order to reach those relief chambers above, you need a ladder. You need a ladder that is about 8 meters high.
All right.
I don't know if you can imagine this. It's about 3 times 8.
And it's going up to what?
That's it. So it goes up to a very small opening that leads into a tunnel, very narrow tunnel. Now, let me tell you, climbing up this, if there is a ladder, I mean, you need to have a ladder in the pyramid to access this. And you climb up this, whatever ladder is there, and you reach this very narrow opening. It's very, very dangerous, by the way. I've never been up there because, for various reasons, but it's extremely dangerous. You're 30 feet above the ground in very dark conditions on top of a rickety ladder.
Yeah.
And what you have to do is to try and get into this very narrow opening. Once you're in there, you sneak into this tunnel, and you reach the first relief chamber.
And is the tunnel big enough for a human being to crawl through?
Yes.
Okay.
It's big enough. This tunnel, by the way, is a mystery. No one knows who drilled it, probably in antiquity. You reach what is known as the first relief chamber. The chamber is a big word for it because it's very low. It's very low. You actually have to crouch in that so-called chamber.
Okay.
It has a peculiar name. It's called Davison Chamber. And the reason it has this name is because it was discovered, or at least the first person known to have been in this chamber was an Englishman in 1763.
And I bet his name was Davidson.
And his name was Davidson. So he carved his name. He carved his name then, and it inherited his name. So it's known as Davison Chamber. And this is what, in 1837, so almost 200 years later, the explorer come adventurer, Colonel Howard Vyse, guessed correctly that there might be other chambers above the Davison Chamber.
Ah.
Now, in order to break into above the chamber. Now, let me tell you what these chambers are made of and the King's Chamber. They're made of granite blocks. And can I go on describing this? I don't know if I'm taking too much time here.
No, we've got time, and we're going to come up to the break in a few minutes, but go ahead. And these blocks, I assume, are huge, aren't they?
Yes, the King's Chamber itself is made of very, very large blocks, some of them weighing 60 tons. Yes, I mean, this is one of the big mysteries of the pyramid. First of all, why they would want to make them of granite, because the granite has to be brought from 600 miles upriver. It's not available in the pyramid area.
Right.
And the ceiling, this is the important thing, the ceiling of the chamber is made of granite beams.
Jeez.
There's 9 of them. And each weigh approximately 70 tons. It's baffling. It's baffling how this was done. But, if this wasn't enough, when you get into Davidson Chamber, which I've just described, the chamber, of course, has the floor, which is the ceiling of the King's Chamber. And its ceiling, the Davidson ceiling, is made of similar beams. There's another 9 of these gigantic beams. To break into through these beams, Colonel Vyse in 1837 tried to with axes and pick axes, and it's impossible. It's like breaking through a tank, you know.
Or a big vault in a bank.
Or a big vault in a bank. So unfortunately. And in those days, things were very slack, and he used gunpowder. And he blasted through the ceiling of the Davison Chamber, and lo and behold, he found another chamber.
So he created, he made a big hole or a small hole just for a person?
A small hole about, it's big enough for a man or a very large person to climb through.
I'm amazed the Egyptians would allow him to blow part of that up.
Well, today, of course, not. But this was 1837, and
yeah.
It's very sad. I mean, you know, I've written a book with my colleague Ahmed Osman called "Breaking the Mirror of Heaven," and you know, what was going on at the time was very, very sad. The leaders of Egypt, which were actually Turks at the time,
hold on, Robert. We're at that break, but we'll come right back. Well, we're coming up really soon on Christmas, and the producer of the Holiday Magic Co-Style CD wants to cut a bigger check to the veteran charities. And so many of us just donated our time, our energies to make this happen for them. So we need your help. I'm looking for 100 of you who have not bought this inexpensive CD to go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Click the picture of the CD cover. It'll take you to amazon.com, and you can order the CD. You'll get it in time for Christmas. We need the big push now, because it's not going to be available until right after January 1st it ends. So take advantage of it. Go to our website. You'll see it in the highlight reel. We'll take your phone calls next hour on the Great Pyramids of Giza with Robert Bavall. Robert, let's get back into this chamber, though. This is fascinating how they blasted it away and then up they go. They just keep on going. But continue with your story, Robert.
Yes, let me carry on with this story, because it gets really, really interesting.
I like it.
Excuse me, I'll just...
Get yourself a little glass of water there, Mr. Bavall, and off we go with the story.
It's a book that I would suggest to Dan Brown, honestly, as the story unfolds.
Oh, really? Wow.
Anyway, we're now in the second relief chamber, blasting through that one. A third chamber was found. Blasting through the third chamber,
jeez,
a fourth chamber was found. And finally, blasting through that one, a fifth chamber. And this is the interesting one. By the way, all the other chambers were given English names, so they're still known by these names. Rather annoying, to be honest with you. I mean, it's rather odd to call them. One is called Nelson, and the other one is called Wellington. And one of them, which always is a tongue twister for me, is Lady Arbuthnot. Now, why would the chamber of the Great Pyramids be called Lady Arbuthnot?
Really?
Apparently, she was a friend of the British consul at the time. Anyway, so we enter the very final chamber. The very final chamber, known as Campbell's Chamber. And this one, unlike the others, which are very, very low, as I said, and they have these flat roofs that are made of these beams, the very last one, Campbell's Chamber, has a pitched roof or a gable roof. And there you can stand up. You can stand up.
Okay.
Now, what is most interesting about this chamber and the other three chambers below, not the Davidson chamber, the first one, but all the others, four chambers, they contain graffiti. They contain graffiti. Now, let me explain about this graffiti. It is, Egyptologists have another name for it. Sometimes it's called the graffiti, other times they call it the quarry marks. In any case, this graffiti is made of red ochre paint. Red ochre paint is a natural mineral, mm-hmm, that is found in the Egyptian desert and many other deserts of the world. You know the tennis courts, by the way? The red tennis courts?
Right.
Right. It's made of a rather similar mineral. It's a ferrous oxide, sometimes called laterite. Anyway,
it's like iron, right?
That's right. That's right. And it's extremely red. I mean, I've actually seen it in its natural state in the desert. And it's very impressive. I mean, you remove the surface sand, which is yellow, and you come across this ferrous oxide, this red ochre, and it looks like blood. Some people think they found a blood patch. Really, it's very, very red. Anyway, you mix it with water, and you get this beautiful red paint, which was used not just by the Egyptians, by the way. You find it in prehistoric caves and various other ancient monuments or caves. Anyway, having said this, workers who were obviously involved in the construction of the pyramids painted this graffiti. And some of it is rather insignificant. They've painted little animals and... looks like they were using it also for leveling, to mark the levels of the block so you can see straight lines.
All right.
But the most interesting thing about them is that there is hieroglyphs. There are writings. And the one in Campbell's chamber, the very last chamber, has a hieroglyphic inscription that is the holy grail, if you like, of the pyramid research, because it is known as the Khufu cartouche graffiti. Now, for those who don't know what a cartouche is, sorry if I'm being a bit, I'm doing a bit of an Egyptological lesson here, but it's important.
That's okay. We're learning. I like that.
The names of kings of Egypt, the pharaohs, were written inside an oval-shaped sign, looking like a cartridge, if you like, you know, like a bullet.
Okay.
The name was given by the French Egyptologists. They call it cartouche, which actually means cartridge. And inside this so-called cartouche are hieroglyphs that give the name of the king. Now, the one found in Campbell's chamber has the name of Khufu, the name of Khufu, which the Greeks called Cheops. And this is the name that was allocated by Herodotus and various other writers to the king of the fourth dynasty, allegedly, who built the Great Pyramid. So to the Egyptologists, this is, you know, although the graffiti really has no value in itself, the significance of this cartouche is the holy grail, really, because it is, as far as Egyptologists are concerned, proof positive that the pyramid was constructed by King Khufu of the fourth dynasty. So that's it. And you can imagine that it is the most important, I suppose, graffiti in the world, because it's the signature, if you like, if one accepts its authenticity, because this is what is at cause, by the way, as I will explain, of the builder of the pyramid.
And what was the time period of this dynasty?
Well, the pyramids of Giza are allocated by Egyptologists to the fourth dynasty, and the time period is about 2500 BC. The fourth dynasty is, well, Egyptologists have separated or chronologized the Egyptian civilization into dynasties and periods. So the age of the pyramid is known as the Old Kingdom. And the builders of Giza are kings of the so-called fourth dynasty, which in itself is rather has raised a lot of intrigue, of course, among researchers, is that it's a very, very early stage of Egyptian civilization, if one accepts, again, the orthodox view. And it's kind of strange, and it has always been baffling to many researchers, that pyramids of that quality and size were begun at the beginning of the civilization. One would have thought at the end.
And you, though, you've been a believer, though, that the pyramids are much older, aren't you?
I'm a believer. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Let me get in this cartouche business, because you will see that it raises the question of the age of the pyramid. Now, that was it. Egyptologists have sat on this this evidence and have said, that's it, you know, we have confirmation. Those chambers were sealed. They were discovered in 1837. And therefore, the graffiti is authentic. It is contemporary with the monument. And therefore, it proves that the monument was built by King Khufu of the fourth dynasty around 2500 BC. That's it. However, comes along one of you, I think you must have interviewed him, Zakaria Sitchin.
Oh, yeah, many times.
Right.
And you know he passed away
yes,
a few years ago. Yeah,
I knew him as well, yes. Well, Zakaria Sitchin, in 1981, wrote a book called The Stairway to Heaven. And in there, he has a chapter where he discusses this cartouche. And he suspected, for reasons that are, well, I have to admit, a bit confusing, but nonetheless, there was reasons that the cartouche might not be authentic. In other words, that Howard Weiss, when he blasted his way into these chambers, faked the cartouche.
Ah.
And the reason, according to Sitchin, that he faked it was that he found nothing in the chambers, and he wanted to find something. He was so desperate to find something.
Yeah.
That he faked the cartouche in order to say, I'm the person who has proved that the pyramid belongs to King Khufu. Now, What was the reason for this possible faking, apart from the motive that he wanted to get famous, was that, according to Sitchin, there was an error in the inscription. It was written in such a way that one of the signs seemed to have been erroneously put there, and because how the vice misunderstood how to write hieroglyphs. Now, by the way, this has been proved to be wrong. But in any case, the only way to prove that this cartouche is authentic or not is to test it scientifically.
Right.
Now, here's the problem. Red ochre is a non-organic mineral.
So you can't carbon date it. No.
You can't carbon date it. But, but it is possible, because they found this in other graffiti elsewhere, that the red ochre was mixed with the resin, with glue, if you like, in order to stick it on the stone. So if that is the case, you can carbon date resin, because it's organic. They would have had resin from either trees or from bees or from whatever they would have got a natural
pollen
resin.
Something, yeah.
Right. So many people, since Zakaria Sitchin raised the issue, have suggested to the Egyptian authorities, well, why not test it and get it over with to prove it one way or the other? Now, the graffiti was found in 1837, and now here we are in 2013, last year, and the Egyptologist, in spite of the demands by various researchers, never bothered to test this graffiti.
Jeez.
And this is one of the big mysteries of Egyptology, apart from many other things that they haven't done, to be honest.
So still it has not been tested?
Well, until these Germans came along. So we come back to these Germans.
Okay.
Right. And let me give you again, because this story gets quite incredible, because there's a twist to this story, George, that I'll get to at the end that will really surprise you.
All right. It's like a Twilight Zone movie, Robert.
Oh, yes. And I'm in the middle of it. You'll understand why in a minute.
Okay.
Here comes these three Germans. Now, let me name them. One of them is called Stefan Erdmann. Stefan Erdmann is an old hand at the Giza Necropolis. He's been going there for the last 30 years. He has entered the pyramid endless times, and he has indeed entered the pyramid with private permits several times in the past.
Okay.
And he's written books about the pyramid, and one of the things that he had in mind was, of course, this cartouche business. You know, is it authentic? Is it not authentic? And he's questioned it several times in his books. And he has, I think it was in 2006 or 7, it's a bit unclear, entered the pyramid with a private permit, with a TV crew. Now, don't ask me how they got cameras in there, but they did. With a TV crew, and they did a documentary. And he took some samples. Now, he took samples from the walls of the pyramid. I'm not quite sure exactly where, but he took samples from some broken bits that were lying on the ground and from outside the pyramid. All right? And this was in 2007, so this was well known, apparently, in Germany. I had never heard of this. Now, in 2012, he gets in touch with a scientist called Dominik Gorlitz. Dominik Gorlitz is an experimental archaeologist. One of his specialities, by the way, you might be interested in this. He's kind of keen to be on your show, by the way. And hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dominik Gorlitz is the successor of the great explorer Thor Heyerdahl. You remember
Thor
Heyerdahl?
Oh, really? Yeah, in Kon-Tiki.
That's right. Well, Dominik Gorlitz has and is, in fact, at the moment, launching a Egyptian-style boat to prove again that the Egyptian crossed the Pacific, the Atlantic.
Okay.
But that's one of his occupations. Now, Stefan Erdmann convinced Dominik Gorlitz to go in the pyramid and take samples. This time, they wanted to take samples from two areas. And this is very, very interesting. One of them was the ceiling. You remember those huge ceiling blocks that I described that covered the king's chamber?
Those nine pillars type things.
That's
yeah.
right. Now, the huge question that has been raised endless times is how, in God's name, were these huge beams quarried in the first place, carried down the Nile for 600 miles, dragged to the, on top of the hill where the pyramid is, and then lifted 50 meters and put in position in the king's chamber perfectly with no damage and with extreme precision?
I mean, I know,
even today we would have
an enormous
task to do this. I mean,
we
lifting 70-ton blocks to a height of 50 meters without damaging them and putting them so precisely is a very, very difficult thing to imagine, even with modern equipment.
And Robert, let me ask you this real quickly, though. Do you think these chambers were built before they built the outside of the pyramid, or was that built first and then they went inside and built these chambers?
No, they couldn't have done that. They were building the pyramid up to the level of the floor level of the king's chamber, and then they built the chamber with these huge granite blocks.
Mm-hmm. And then it went up again in stages.
The ceiling, and then it went up again, yes.
Okay.
So what they noticed, these Germans had noticed, was that, try and visualize this, these beams spanning from one wall to the other, forming the ceiling. On the edge of each beam was very dark markings that had been assumed to be, wrongly, by the way, soot from torches of ancient times.
Sure. Okay.
However,
smoke
they
soot.
Had managed to get high-definition photography, and it looked to them that the black, whatever it is,
uh-huh.
was actually encrusted within the granite, actually almost glued with it. It couldn't
glued.
Have been soot.
It was part of the granite.
It seemed to be part of the granite. It seemed to be something that was blown into it or grafted into it.
Mm-hmm.
So what they wanted to do was get samples from that black, whatever it was. In order to do that, they needed a ladder, of course. They need a ladder because the king's chamber is about 4-5 meters high, and you need a ladder to access the
right.
ceiling.
To get up there.
The other thing they wanted to do was to go in the relief chambers and take samples from the graffiti. So you get the picture. They got a private visit permit, which was officially obtained by a tour operator.
Mm-hmm.
They present themselves at the gate of the pyramid. And it was on the 17th of April last year. Three inspectors are there waiting for them. Two security guards, security police, and one guard. So there's six Egyptians there assigned to supervise this visit. Now, amazingly, they go inside the pyramid with cameras and other equipment that they needed in order to remove the samples, some scalpels and little, they
right.
needed some containers to put the samples in.
Whatever now, they needed, they had, right?
Whatever they needed, they had. And I can't understand how it was possible for them to take this equipment inside with all the security going on at the time.
Unless they gave them permission. Robert, we're at the top of the hour. Hold that thought. We'll come back with more.